Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Every week at this hour, Canada Dry presents its unrehearsed and go-as-you-please inquisition program, Information, Please. Here's how it's done. You may submit from 1 to 3 original questions. We, in turn, submit them to a panel of 4 experts. For every question they fail to answer, the sender gets $10 with the compliments of Canada Dry. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. That means a possible high of $15, which is mighty nice going. Don't fret if our editorial staff changes or edits your question a little. All questions become the property of Information, Please, and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. Now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Ladies and gentlemen, before we go any further this evening, we should like to express the heartfelt thanks of everyone on this program for the honor that the Women's National Radio Committee has accorded Information, Please, in selecting it as the best quiz program on the air. Now, as for the questions on Information, Please, as you know, they come as a complete surprise to you, me, and the Board of Experts. The rules are simple, though the questions aren't. I address the stickers to the entire board, and any ambitious member of it may raise his hand and try to answer. If he misses, Canada Dry pays out $10 to the sender, plus $5 for the use of the question itself. Now, this evening, we have a scintillating selection of cerebral celebrities. That unfazable pair are with us again. Franklin P. Adams, learned columnist of the New York Post's Conning Tower, and John Kieran, the sports expert whose intellectual batting average runs around 950. And we're glad to welcome 2 guests of honor, Arthur Kroc, outstanding political journalist, and Alice Roosevelt Longworth, whose fame does not depend merely on the fact that she is the daughter of Theodore Roosevelt. Now, Mrs. Longworth and gentlemen, if your memories and brains are ready, so is Canada Dry's cash register. The first question, coming from Mr. James D. Turley of Lansing, Kansas, tests a field that we have never investigated before on this program. Now, 30 years ago, I think you can probably, in the case of all, cast your mind back there. 30 years ago, you could tell a man's occupation from his facial adornments. Now you can't. Or as Mr. Adams would probably say, here today, gone tomorrow. Now, from the descriptions, I'm going to ask you to identify the following. If a man had a closely trimmed, pointed beard with a mustache about 30 years ago, to what profession or occupation might he possibly belong? Mr. Kroc.
A doctor.
A doctor is right. Suppose he had a Lincoln chin bunch. A Lincoln chin bunch. Mr. Kroc again.
He would be Speaker Cannon of the House of Representatives.
Well, yes, that was a lifetime occupation, wasn't it?
Right.
Mr. Kroc. He would be Speaker Cannon, old Uncle Joe Cannon. And otherwise, what other occupation would be suggested by that kind of hirsute adornment?
A horse trader.
like David Harum, you mean? Yes, a farmer. Any old rural character, I guess. Suppose he had a mustache and a goatee. What would that make you think of?
Buffalo Bill.
Buffalo Bill is absolutely right.
Better known as William F. Cody.
Nice of you to give us that extra information, Mr. Adams. Also, he might be a villain in an old melodrama, conceivably. Now, suppose he had a slick hair comb, parted in the middle, with a mustache curled up on each end. Mrs. Longworth, you wouldn't know this, I think. Or do you?
A villain.
Yes, a villain. No,
melodrama villain.
A slick hair comb parted in the middle with a mustache curled up on each end. Mr. Kieran, did you have the answer?
Well, I was going to say Desperate Desmond.
I don't remember the slick hair comb or the mustache. Yes, I think he did have a mustache curled up on each end. Mr. Adams?
A barber.
A barber might do. Take the first syllable of barber, and what do you get, Mr. Kieran, if you add another 2
keeper.
Syllables to it?
Tender.
Barkeeper, yes, a bartender. I think a bartender used to be delineated as having a slick hair comb parted in the middle with a mustache curled up on each end. 4 out of 4 on Mr. Turley's question. What can you do with this one? Miss M. Sadler of Englewood, New Jersey, sends us a stanza made up of lines from 4 well-known poems. I'm going to ask you to identify each line. Here is the stanza she's made up. O woman, in our hours of ease, beside the lake, beneath the trees, and many an eye has danced to see that not impossible she. I regret to inform Miss Sadler that her last line limps a trifle as a foot left out
I'll do it again and put the foot in. O woman, in our hours of ease, beside the lake, beneath the trees, and many an eye has danced to see that not impossible dum-dum she. Now, now that we've got that straight, can you identify the lines? Mrs. Longworth.
O woman, in our hours of ease, uncertain, coy, and hard to please.
From? That's quite correct. And can you ascribe...
No, I can't.
Can you give us the author?
The moment you tell me, I'll know who it was, but I can't say it myself.
Miss Crock.
Scott.
Marmion. Right. Scott's Marmion. You do a lot of other things besides political journalism, don't you, Mr. Crock? Read poetry and all. That's quite right. The first line comes from Sir Walter Scott's Marmion, and the second line. Mr. Crock.
I'll ask you to repeat it, please.
I'll repeat the stanza, but I shan't repeat each line.
Just the line. Oh,
a woman in our hours of ease, beside the lake, beneath the trees, and many an eye has danced to see that not impossible dum-dum she.
Beside the lake, beneath the trees is from Wordsworth's Daffodils.
Yes, that's quite right. Poems of the imagination. And the third line, Mrs. Longworth, did you have it? Mr. Adams?
And many an eye has danced to see that banner in the sky.
That's right.
Old Ironsides.
Old Ironsides. By whom?
O.W. Holmes.
O.W. Holmes. Very good, Mr. Adams. The fourth and last line is perhaps the only one that really is a sticker. It doesn't come from a too familiar poem. That not impossible she? Mr. Adams.
Begins, whoe'er she be.
Very good. And goes on with that not impossible
that
she,
not impossible
which we already
she.
Know. That shall command my heart and me. But you have to give me the author. I'm sorry.
Can't do it.
Oh, gee, Mr. Adams. Can I dredge it out of you? Mrs. Longworth, can you help us out?
It's Elizabethan and I...
Wait, no, it isn't. It's a modern author, and I think it's an American.
Mr. Kuhn, you're not so good on modern authors.
No.
You shouldn't have put your foot in it. Mrs. Longworth is much more nearly correct. A 17th century author, Richard Crashaw, the poem Wishes to His Supposed Mistress. I think on the whole, we have identified all those lines more or less correctly with a little help from the MC this evening. The next question from Stanley Levinson of this city. To what news stories do the following refer? A plurality of only 183,410 gives the Republicans hope for 1940. What would, if you saw that line in the paper, what do you think it would refer to? What news story? A recent one. Mrs. Longworth, you are a Republican, I believe.
Occasionally.
You should be able to help us out on that, Mr. Crock.
The Chicago mayoralty election.
Yes. What was involved in the Chicago mayoralty election?
The office of mayor, largely.
Yes, but who won? who won?
Mayor Kelly was reelected.
Yes, a Democrat.
Yes.
But by a very small...
By that plurality.
Plurality. So that there is some hope the Republicans believe that they'll possibly win the state of Illinois.
There's always some hope.
There is always some hope. Mrs. Longworth, you wouldn't care to comment on the Republicans' chances for 1940?
I don't think at present, thank you.
All right, no, perhaps we'll call on you again in 1940, Illinois. Mrs. Longworth.
Yes.
Now, suppose you saw the phrase, penalized $711,932.55 for sitting down. What would that bring to your mind, Mr. Kieran?
I hope I don't have to give all the details on that.
No.
That was a judgment against a labor organization for calling a sit-down strike.
That's there was damage to that extent alleged, I believe the case was adjudicated against the
labor union.
Against the labor union.
It was in Philadelphia.
Do you remember the name of the
Apex,
case?
Wasn't it?
The Apex case versus Branch 1 of the CIO's American Federation of Hosiery Workers. I'm sure we're going to remember that. 3. A vote of 506 out of 909 leads to a cry of resign, resign. What does that call to the minds of these four newspaper people? A cry of 506 out of 909 leads to a cry of resign, resign.
British House of Commons.
Sorry, Mrs. Longworth.
The French Chamber of Deputies.
Yes, the French Chamber of Deputies. What was involved? What issue was involved there? It refers to Lebrun's re-election as President of France. I'm afraid we have to mark ourselves wrong on that, though you had part of it, Mr. Crock. Now, suppose you saw the phrase, appendectomy sets city back $600,000. Appendectomy sets city back $600,000. Mrs. Longworth, you have it?
I don't know.
Yes?
Appendicitis.
Yes, but what would be the news story?
How would be the news story? What is that, actually?
Mr. Kieran, did you have it? Well, it was it refers to the... beg your pardon, Mr.
A mistrial here the other day in New York City because
Newark,
of the illness of a juror. Well, Newark, it was the trial of the mayor and some of the city officials on charges of corruption.
That's quite right. And
Ellenstein.
Mayor Ellenstein of Newark, and Ada's defendants. The mistrial cost $600,000 because of the emergency operation on one of the jurors who apparently had to get his cut, too. And that would give us 3 out of 4. And that's going to lose us $10, which Canada Dry will send out to Mr. Levin. Plus $5 for sending in a very good question. Now the next one for Mr. L. Fitzpatrick of Chicago, Illinois. This is a literary question, and a very difficult one, if I may say so, just to make you nervous. The following are the unfamiliar names of several well-known fictional characters. You are to give the names or nicknames for which they are better known. Who is, for example, Sir Percy Blakeney? Sir Percy Blakeney, Mr. Curran.
The Scarlet Pimpernel.
Very good, Mr. Curran. Bullseye. Frank X. Farrell. Frank X. Farrell. And here's one that conceivably Mr. Curran ought to know, but might not. Frank X. Farrell is the real name of the famous Ring Lardner character, Alibi Ike. Remember that now, Mr. Curran?
I remember Alibi Ike.
But you don't remember Frank X. Farrell. One wrong. Hank Morgan. Hank Morgan. Who was Hank Morgan? I knew I'd get them on this one.
Sir Henry Morgan.
I wouldn't like to argue with you on that, Mr. Adams. You're quite right. Do you think they called him Hank, though? The old pirate?
I doubt it.
Let's cry Mr. Adams down. No, no. Hank Morgan is the Connecticut Yankee in Mr. Mark Twain's book, Connecticut Yankee, King Arthur's Court. Connecticut Yankee. His real name was Hank Morgan. Two wrong, and if you get the next one, you're good. Who's Lord Greystoke? Lord Greystoke? Famous character, one of the most famous characters of modern times. You
give
haven't
him the
heard
ten.
The famous? I beg pardon?
Give him the 10.
I think we'll have to give him the 10. Haven't you ever heard the famous Lord Greystoke call? It's Tarzan. Lord Greystoke is Tarzan. He had another name. Tarzan is right. 3 wrong out of 4.
Tarzan's name is Johnny Weissmuller.
Only temporarily. That goes out, that $10 goes out to Mr. Fitzpatrick of Chicago. And now, Mr. Carl Jerome Norton of Northampton, Massachusetts, is very inquisitive about you. He wants to know what you would be doing if you followed these directions. Suppose I said to you, you may go and tedder for an hour, T-E-D-D-E-R. What would I be asking you to do? You may go and tedder for an hour.
Why don't...
Mr. Curran.
Well, I know what Ted means. To Ted is I don't recognize it in that other form. It means go out and pitch hay.
All right. Don't say any more. That's quite right. Tettering is haying. A tedder is a machine also is to loosen the hay when it's drying.
A tedder is a machine, but I didn't, the verb that I know was to ted. However.
Well, it's grown up since your time. It's a little word in your day. And now
great word in crossword puzzles.
I'm going to count you right unless you want to continue arguing with me, Mr. Curran. Now, suppose I said to you, do 2 trebles, 3 doubles, 3 singles, and a turn. What would I be asking you to do? 3 2 trebles, 3 doubles, 3 singles, and a turn.
Had a guess?
I regret that Mrs. Longworth does not know one of the useful arts.
Knitting?
I beg pardon?
Knitting?
Like to call you wrong on that. Crocheting would be correct. In knitting, do you know, Mrs. Longworth, whether you can do 2 trebles, 3 doubles, 3 singles in a turn?
I didn't.
Says crocheting. Unless I hear from some knitting expert to the contrary, I'm going to call that wrong, though it was a valiant attempt, Mr. Crocker. A valiant attempt. Now, suppose I said to you, I hate to say this, but I'll have to. Suppose I said to you the following. What would I be asking you to do? First, peck over each other's left shoulder. Then peck over right shoulder, imitating the motions of a chicken, and finish with praise Allah. Do you want to skip this whole thing?
I'm sorry it came up.
tough one. I see you give up on that.
Sounds like a dance.
Yes, but that's not enough for me, Mr. Curran. It's a good guess. I would be asking you to perform the 4th, and I'm glad to say last step, of the Big Apple. And the instructions that I've given you have come from Arthur Murray's dance book, so I know they're quite correct. Well, we seem to have lost $10 on that, which Canada Dry will send out to Mr. Norton, plus $5 for the question. Now, what can we do on this one? Coming from Cordelia A. Bogart of Brockton, Massachusetts. Has to do with rivers. Beside what river did the Jolly Miller live? Oh, they all know that. All know that, Mrs. Longworth.
Dee.
Dee, yes. Do you remember the lines?
was a jolly miller once lived by the River Dee.
Yes? What do you mean?
I care for nobody. No, not I. Nobody cares for me.
That's all I remember. But first he walked and worked and sung from morn to night, no lock, as blithe as he.
That's right.
I bet you can't give me the origin of it. Mr. Kieran.
The origin?
Yes, who wrote the poem?
Bickerstaff.
Good. How did you know that, Mr. Kieran?
Why wouldn't I?
You mean Isaac Bickerstaff?
Mm-hmm. Isaac Bickerstaff is right, Mr. Adams. Now, on what river, we're still on rivers, remember, on what river did Jim Bludsoe hold her nozzle again the bank till the last galoot's ashore? Mr. Croc.
It was on the Mississippi, where boats had their time.
That's right. Remember the author of the poem?
Surprisingly enough, John Hay.
John Hay, yes. Wrote a lot of poems in dialect, didn't he?
Yes. Pike County Ballads, they were called.
It's remarkable what you know, Mr. Croc.
I read the New Yorker.
You're going to qualify. Thank you so much. You're going to qualify as a poetry expert along with Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams, who furnish very stiff competition. All right, how about the third river? Into what river did the Pied Piper lure the rats of Hamelin? Let's give Mr. Kieran a chance, Mr. Croc.
The Weser.
The Weser, yes.
Yeah.
Very good, the Weser. Hamelin towns in Brunswick by the famous Hanover City, the River Weser, deep and wide, of course, from the poem by Robert Browning. What river did Eliza cross on the ice? What river did Mrs. Longworth?
The Ohio.
The Ohio. From what state to what state?
Kentucky to Ohio.
From Kentucky to Ohio, yes, that's quite right. We got all the rivers, right? Let's see. The staff arithmetician has just informed me that a total of $30 has wormed its way through the mental defenses of our experts. So Mr. Milton Cross is going to step into the breach now with a terse message about Canada Dry.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. The symbols of stage magic are a black silk hat and a white rabbit. But the symbols of Canada Dry magic are the green bottle and its sparkling contents. For within this familiar emerald green bottle is a ginger ale which has the exact flavor and bouquet of the choicest Jamaica ginger. It seems magical that the superior qualities of nature's finest ginger can be carried into the green bottle. And it is almost magical because Canada Dry employs an exclusive secret process of extraction whereby the delicate taste, essence, and aroma are transferred without the slightest loss from Jamaica ginger to Canada Dry ginger ale. The good earth, the tropical sun, and modern science work hand in hand in the creation of Canada Dry. And all you have to do to enjoy the delicious, refreshing result of this magical collaboration is to write Canada Dry ginger ale at the top of tomorrow's grocery list.
Mr. Cross, your impressive discourse on sorcery was timed in precisely 54 seconds. And speaking of timing, ladies and gentlemen, next week in those cities that do not observe daylight saving time, information, please, will be heard 1 hour earlier. Now suppose we go back to the second half of our program. And at the same time, let's go back to the year 1919. Does any of you mind if I take you back to 1919 with the help of Mrs. J. Bruce Diffenderfer of Wilmington, Delaware, who sends us this question? Now, in 1919, you look at a billboard and you see the words, "Sure, we'll finish the job." What do they mean? 1919. 20 years ago. Mr. Kieran.
Well, it had to do with the peace settlement abroad.
No, I'm sorry. You're on the right track. They would be a... The words would be urging you to subscribe to the post-war victory loan. Remember that now? Sure, we'll finish the job. Seems to me I remember the poster itself with a man with his hands in his pockets and overalls. All right, one wrong. You wake up on July 1st, 1919, and as you do so, you feel either righteously elated or highly disgusted. Adams knows that. Why?
Because on that day you... Fatal
day.
Couldn't drink anymore.
Couldn't drink anymore. Prohibition
legally
took it back. That's right. On July 1st, 1919. Now in September...
I think it was not sold after that. I think you could drink until the following January 1st.
Nice of you to remember that, Mr.
It's Adam. A little before my time.
I have to get 2 out of 3 on this. Now, in September of 1919, across the front of the newspapers, you probably see these words. No right to strike against the public safety by anybody, anywhere, anytime. Mr. Croc.
Boston police strike.
Yes, sir. Who's the author of those words?
I fear it was Calvin Coolidge.
It was indeed, Calvin Coolidge. And possibly those words on the Boston police strike itself helped to catapult him into the White House.
Yes, possibly.
Quite possibly. We did get 2 out of 3 on that. The next one from Mrs. John B. Delaney of Waterbury, Connecticut. This, too, has to do with literature. Each of the given selections is followed by two famous lines, lines that most of us know. I'm going to ask you to complete two of them out of four. I chatter, chatter as I flow to join the brimming river. How does that go on, Mr. Kieran?
But men may come and men may go, but I go on forever.
That's right. And the author of the poem?
Tennyson.
Tennyson, the poem
the Brook.
Is called The Brook is right. We get it all out of Mr.
It's
Kieran.
It's only part of a... It's an insert in another poem.
What's the larger poem called?
I think Thanatopsis. No. It's called Walking for the Mail. Walking for the Mail. Something like that.
Probably
it's
the only man...
It's broken up in this longer poem.
I'm not denying it, Mr. Kieran.
Oh, you've got to deny it.
All right. One right. Since sorrow never comes too late and happiness too swiftly flies, thought would destroy their paradise. How does that go on? Two very famous lines. Mr. Kroc.
When ignorance is bliss...
Go ahead.
'Tis folly to be wise.
Yes, you have it all except two words.
No more.
No more. Thank you,
words.
Mr. Kieran. No more. Where ignorance is bliss, 'tis folly to be wise. Mr. Kroc, do you know where the lines come from?
No idea.
Mr. Kieran.
Yes, on a distant prospect of Eton Towers by Gray, I think.
Yes, Eton College.
Eton College by
Eton
Thomas
College.
Gray, the author of the famous Elegy in a Country Graveyard. Now, here is a very famous quotation. Scatter, as from an unextinguished hearth, ashes and sparks, my words among mankind. Be through my lips to unawakened earth. How does that go on? A poem we all learned, I think, in high school. Shelley's Ode to the West Wind. Be through my lips to unawakened earth the trumpet of a prophecy. Right. Oh, wind, or wind, if you prefer. If winter comes, can spring be far behind? Mr. Adams, are you going to correct me?
No.
On wind, or wind? All right. Here's the last one. Here, where Ceylon's breezes blow soft o'er Ceylon's isle. Mr. Adams.
Though information pleases, and only man is vile.
Oh, that's approximately correct.
Though every prospect...
and only man is vile. But I think the other will now become classic, Mr. Adams. We did get 2 out of 4 on that. Not losing $10. Thank you, Mr. Adams. From L. McIntosh of Trenton, New Jersey, comes the following very serious question. With what legislation is each of the following men prominently identified? Senator Norris, the first. Senator Norris, Mrs. Longworth.
Constitutional, the lame duck amendment.
The lame duck amendment.
Yeah.
And would there be any other piece of legislation that he's also...
TVA.
The TVA, yes. Tennessee Valley Authority. Senator Joseph O'Mahony. Mrs. Longworth? I'm sorry, I thought you had your hand up. Mr. Kroc?
Piece of legislation, did the questioner say?
The piece of legislation, yes.
Well, he wrote the report condemning the Supreme Court enlargement bill and an unfavorable report from the Senate Committee on the Judiciary, which is certainly connecting him with an attempted piece of legislation.
Yes, I think
that report did much to kill.
Yes. And is he also associated with a monopoly inquiry or...
He's the chairman of that, but there's no legislation.
Very good.
Been done yet.
Very good. That would do. How about Senator Hiram Johnson? Senator Hiram Johnson. Mr. Kroc.
He is the author of the Johnson Act denying credit to our debtors abroad, American credit to our debtors abroad.
Yes, ought to save us a lot of money in the near future, possibly. Senator Morris Shepherd. Senator Morris Shepherd. Mrs. Longworth.
Prohibition.
Yes, you do remember that, Mrs. Longworth. Prohibition is right. Senator Morris Shepherd. All right.
He's the co-author. It took 2 to put that one on.
Who was the other one?
Senator Barkley of Kentucky.
Oh, Alvin Barkley.
Then a representative in Congress, not knowing his future.
Dear Alvin. Mr. Jack Bean of Hartsell, Alabama, asks some questions about animals. What questions were asked of these animals? A fly. What question was asked of a fly? Mr. Kieran.
Will you walk into my parlor?
Yes. So the spider to the fly. Very good, Mr. Kieran. A snail. What question was asked of a snail? Mr. Adams.
Will you walk a little faster?
Said...
The whiting to the snail.
Very good.
There's a porpoise right behind me, and he's treading on my tail.
Thank you so much, Kieran. A lamb. What question was asked of a lamb? Mr. Kroc.
Oh, little lamb, who made you?
Thee. Yes. Probably a Quaker lamb.
By Mr. Clough.
No, you've got the wrong author.
Clough didn't write that?
No, not Clough. Who wrote it? Mr. Adams, do you know? Mr. Longley?
Blake?
Yes. Blake is quite correct. Little lamb, who made thee? Dost thou know who made thee? Gave thee life and bid thee feed by the streams or the mead, something like that. How about a cat? What question was asked of a cat? Mrs. Longworth.
Pussycat, where have you been?
Quite right, yes, quite right. From Mother Goose, of course, thank you. Now, the next question from Mrs. H.B. Gessheimer of Los Angeles, California. What American man held a prominent public office in which he had neither a predecessor nor a successor? A sticker.
Say it again, will you?
I will. What American man held a prominent public office in which he had neither a predecessor nor a successor?
Prominent public office?
Very prominent, indeed. Mr. Kieran?
Well, there was a Marine sergeant who became an emperor down in an island.
I wouldn't be prominent. No, I think the answer, and the only possible answer for this, would be Jefferson Davis, who was president of the Confederacy and the only president.
It could be Sam Houston also.
It could be Sam Houston. I should think Jefferson Davis would be the correct answer on that. That would pay out $10 to Mrs. H.B. Gessheimer. Now, we show a loss of $40 altogether. I have important news of next week's guests, but first let's hear from Mr. Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. If you were asked to briefly describe a club soda, would you say, well, it's water with bubbles in it? That's true, of course. But if it was sparkling Canada Dry water you were describing, you should add millions of smaller bubbles and a formula that makes this water blend well and give your favorite drink finer flavor and extra tang. So you can see it does make a difference. That's why we think it's important that when you're out at your favorite club, restaurant, or hotel, be sure to ask for sparkling Canada Dry water and order this fine club soda when you're doing your marketing, for you'll soon discover it's a delicious table water. And wouldn't you enjoy playing Information Please at home? It's a lot of fun and easy, too, because we have prepared an Information Please game. It's the second edition, and here's all you have to do to get your copy. Mail large pieces of the labels, or if you prefer, only the caps from two bottles of any of Canada Dry's many beverages. Mail them in an envelope together with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. Or if you live in Canada, the address is Canada Dry, Toronto, Ontario. Include with your 10 cents your own name and address, and this interesting game is yours.
Thanks, Mr. Cross, and Canada Dry's special thanks to you, Mrs. Longworth, and Mr. Kroc for consenting to come down and play games with us this evening. Next week, our reliable trio will be back, Mr. Levant, Mr. Kieran, and Mr. Adams. I think the best way to announce our special guest of honor is simply to say that we're terribly pleased to have him and that he needs no introduction to you beyond the mention of a name that's known to every American, George M. Cohen. And don't forget, send us your questions. If your question is used, you get $5. If our bright boys don't know or can't guess the answers correctly, you get $10 more. So you can win $15 in all. Why not try it? In fact, gentlemen, this is true, isn't it? We dare you. Letters with questions ought to be sent to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
May we suggest you try Canada Dry's other beverages, Tom Collins Mixer and Lime Ricky. We are sure you'll enjoy them, for they're of the same high quality as Canada Dry's champagne of ginger ales. And you'll find the family-sized bottles of all Canada Dry beverages economical, for they cost only 15 cents plus usual deposits. This is Milton Cross inviting you to join us now in a refreshing glass of Canada Dry. Good night, all.